The recording has started now. You may proceed.
Thank you ever so much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Policy and Implementation PDP Working Group call on the 22nd of April 2015. On the call today, we have Greg Chatton, Amer Sadir, Alex Menskeliz, Chuck Gomes, Alan Greenberg, and Tom Barrett. We have received apologies from Carlos Juan Gutierrez, Michael Graham, Cashel Longdon Orr, Mickey Koenig, and I see in the chat we have apologies from J. Scott Evans too. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Karen Lentz, Steve Chang, Amy Blind, and myself, Nancy Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chuck.
Thank you very much, Natalie. Much appreciated. This is Chuck Gomes, and this is the Policy and Implementation Working Group call on Wednesday, the 22nd of April, 2015. Welcome to everyone. Looks like we have a pretty good turnout. Considering all that's going on. So first thing we have on our agenda, as usual, is roll call and any changes to statement of interest. On the roll call, let's use the Adobe Connect. And if there's anyone who is not in Adobe, please speak up now. Okay, not hearing anyone. We will assume that the Adobe Connect's an accurate reflection of who's attending the meeting. The next item then on our agenda is to try and wrap up the hierarchy of motions issue. And by the way, let me thank those that have participated in the online discussion. That really saves us some time when we get to a meeting like this. Not that we've resolved it online, but I think we have a good basis for hopefully wrapping it up. And Anne, in particular, thank you for some of the specific comments and examples that you provided. That is much appreciated. Now, with regard to hierarchy of motions, Mary provided a suggestion on the 16th of April, which was Thursday, regarding how we might approach it. And the discussion of that is what I was referring to that's happened on the list right up to almost the start of this meeting. So that will be very helpful. Mary, why don't you just very quickly remind everybody what you suggested as a way to handle this, and then I'd like to go to the concern that Anne raised with regard to votes that require a supermajority.
Sure, Chuck. Thanks. This is Mary for the record from staff. And basically, the general idea behind the staff suggestion is to give the council the flexibility and the ability to decide on the most appropriate course of action when faced with what we've called competing motions. So the proposal is to have a general recommendation, as I've stated, supplemented with specific suggestions as to factors and documents that the council ought to consider in coming to its decision. And those factors would include, of course, the nature of each process and what it is each meant to do. Secondly, the documents such as the scoping request or the issue request that was presented, which are required by the processes that we're recommending. And thirdly, any other information that the council may consider relevant. For example, if the issue originated with a board request, then any correspondence or supporting documentation or discussions around that issue could also be considered. So that's the gist of the staff suggestion, Chuck. It may not be as specific as perhaps it could be, but like I said, the general idea is to have the council as manager of the PDP make that decision with at least some sort of boundary guidance from this group. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mary. This is Chuck. Much appreciated. Alan, go ahead and jump in.
Thank you very much. I think Mary's position or recommendation, staff's recommendation is completely rational. The only thing I would caution is if the decision to make, to decide which to vote on or which to do it requires a motion, we don't want a gotcha that that motion wasn't submitted a week ahead of time. So just however you word the recommendation, make sure that we don't get into a catch-22 situation because of it. But I think making the decision based on the, I won't say the facts, but based on the details is about the only way you can proceed. I'll point out that I think Mary, or rather Anne, had asked, you know, what priority do motions normally have? And they normally have the priority assigned to whatever order the agenda is in, which is essentially a chair's prerogative. So there's not a lot of formal process right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. This is Chuck again. And that point was, those points were made well on the list, too.
Yeah.
So that's consistent with what we've been seeing on our list. Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck, and thanks, Alan. Just to follow up on Alan's point about the council process, and as Chuck noted, that's been elaborated on email. As in case folks don't know, the council's meeting agenda is prepared by the chairs with the assistance of staff. That's normally circulated and discussed amongst that group and then circulated to the council well ahead of time of the meeting. As someone noted in email, obviously any councillor has the ability to object or to want to change or edit the agenda items. But the third thing I thought I would emphasize here is that this may not be a formal process, but the custom has been for all the motions to basically come first in the agenda following the consent agenda. There's no convention as to which motion might necessarily go as item 3 versus item 4, however. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mary. Chuck again. And you got Alan's suggestion to word it carefully with regard to meeting motion deadlines and so forth, correct?
Yes, typing it now.
Good. Thank you very much. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, just for clarity, the convention has been in council that decisions are taken without formal motions when they're procedural type issues. I don't think that's written anywhere, but that's been the practice certainly until the time that I left the council. So given that, it's not an issue, but as I said, we want to make sure we don't create an issue by how we word it. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Chuck again. Okay, now let's go to Anne. And Anne, if I understand correctly, you're okay with Mary's suggested approach, with the exception of when one of the motions involved involves the requirement for a supermajority. Did I express that correctly?
Yes.
Thanks, Anne. So I think.
Or actually, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm interrupting you, Chuck. But I would say that that's not really an exception to what Mary has proposed. It's more of a detail with respect to the factors that should be considered when Mary speaks of the various, you know, factors that should be considered. I think it might be helpful to note that when there are two competing motions on the table, that it would make sense to address the one that requires supermajority first. And I do need to ask first, in terms of actual practice, whether competing motions can be fully debated and discussed before either one is voted on them, because I know in normal sort of, you know, Robert's Rules type order, you would have, you know, one motion and discussed and then voted on, and then the next one discussed and then voted on. But it seems to me that with these processes, for example, if you had part of GNSO Council that felt that an issue that was presented really required, say, an EPDP, and another group that felt that a GGP was sufficient, if you voted on the GGP first, you would have kind of cheated the the group that thinks that an EPDP is necessary out of their opportunity to secure the EPDP, because the vote should come first. If there's a difference between, you know, doing an EPDP, if that requires a supermajority, but the GGP we're suggesting might not require a supermajority, then you'd want to vote that EPDP motion first to see if those who advocate the EPDP get their EPDP first. And a second example might be, it's been suggested by some commenters that, and this includes the IPC, so I'll mention that, but I think it also includes the registry stakeholder group, and I'm not sure, maybe others. It's been suggested that the ICANN board should be able to initiate a GGP, a guidance process, unless a supermajority of the council votes against the board's request to initiate a guidance process. And so, if you voted on something else prior to that, some other process, or if you you would not, I don't think, procedurally have properly responded in accordance with the recommendations that we're making, because you would first put the thing to a vote for the GGP, and if you got a supermajority against doing so, against initiating the GGP, even though the board had requested that, then you shut that down and you move on to what the council itself thinks is the appropriate mechanism. But if you vote on something else first and you say, you know, we're going to do the EPDP or whatever, or we don't need to do this at all, then you may not be complying with the procedures that we're actually recommending. So that it's certainly not a disagreement with Mary's language or Mary's approach. It's more just trying to see how that might work practically, and suggesting that one of the factors is the level of voting that's required, and suggesting that where a supermajority is required, that vote should come first.
Thank you, Anne, and I think that's a very important distinction. And my calling it an exception, the way you express it is much better. Now, before I go to the queue, and three people in the queue, I want to respond to what you asked at the beginning. And the council typically follows Robert's Rules of Order. And technically, I think in Robert's Rules of Order, if a motion has been made and seconded, then after any discussion that there might be, it should be acted on. But it's perfectly possible under Robert's Rules of Order for the submitter of the motion to withdraw temporarily or to allow things. And I think the council is fairly flexible in that regard. So if someone raised a point that a motion could be tabled for a little bit or even till the next meeting, in fact, that does happen sometimes. So I think there's enough flexibility to deal with that part. That said, let me turn it over to others and start with Greg.
Thanks, Chuck. Greg Shatton. I think you made some of the points I was going to make, and I think that the, you know, Robert's Rules of Order probably makes it sound a lot more rigid than I think the council actually operates under. So, seems to me that it may be possible, but correct me if I'm wrong, if anybody knows, for the council, in essence, to discuss which, if there are two processes being proposed for the same purpose, to study the same issue or respond to the same issue, is it beyond the council's ability to discuss them together and decide which is the more appropriate one before voting on either one? It seems that this concern about priority and about gaming, a lot of it assumes that there's, you know, some kind of queuing process that we need to somehow make sure it doesn't go awry. But I'm not exactly sure whether we're kind of overthinking that and trying to create kind of secondary methodologies, the secondary gain of which is that it somehow games the gaming or outgames the gaming, but that isn't really, you know, the purpose. I mean, to put a supermajority on something so it gets voted on first rather than so it's harder to approve seems to me to be a kludge at best. So I hope that's kind of not where we're going. So just my two cents. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Greg. It's Chuck. And good discussion in the chat by good points made by Amr and Mary and so forth. So take a look at that if you haven't, that I think are consistent with what Greg said and with what I tried to say there. So, and I don't think we're going there, Greg, or I hope not. Alan, your turn.
Thank you very much. I think most of what Ann said should be either implied in or put in or inferable from what Mary is drafting. I must admit, I got a little bit lost in the alphabet soup of which process we should take precedent over which. And I think, depending on the details, you may come up with the opposite answer in any given case. So I'm not sure we would want to put a rule in place saying thou must do something before something else. But there are factors that should be considered by the council in making the decision. And I think that goes for whether you can discuss both issues before voting. There was a case a while ago when the council developed the concept of a councillor could request a vote be deferred to the next meeting. At one point, that was interpreted as all discussion must stop now until the next meeting. And I and a number of other people pointed out that it would likely be worthwhile continuing the discussion to advise the people who wanted to have more time to think about the issue than deferring all the discussion until the next meeting when they would again be surprised by something they hadn't thought about. And the practice has now been that if you defer a vote, that doesn't mean you defer the discussion. And I think a reasonable extrapolation of that is the discussion on both of these issues, if there's two motions, could be taking place in parallel before the voting. But I think these are all things that Mary can try to capture in providing the guidance. But I really think we shouldn't try to be too prescriptive. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck again. Amr, your turn.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. I wanted to point two things out. First one being sort of the combination. I sort of did this on list, but just to point that out now and hope someone could correct me if I misunderstand this in any way. But the voting threshold levels in Article 10 of the ICANN bylaws are they seem to me to not actually allow a sort of conflict between the voting thresholds necessary to initiate a PAP and what a supermajority voting threshold is. And there are two sets of thresholds for each one. And it seems to me that if you have a sufficient number of councillors who would be willing to affirmatively vote to initiate a PDP, then you would not have a sufficient number of councillors who would actually be able to vote in a supermajority with the supermajority threshold to approve an EPDP. Mathematically, it just seems to me that it's not possible. So I'm not exactly sure that there is an actual concern between an EPDP and a GGP if the same voting thresholds for a PDP are used for the GGP. I think what the actual concern should be is when a PDP conflicts, a motion to initiate a PDP conflicts with a motion to initiate a GGP, because those both have the same voting thresholds, which are quite low. So you could have a number of councillors that could sufficiently vote in the affirmative for both motions, and that's where the conflict may come from. So that's my first point. My second point is my personal point of view is that we shouldn't be associating this concern strictly with a desire to game the process, and to where counselors may want to somehow use process to trump substance. There could be genuine concerns about using a certain process to answer a certain policy question or to hold a certain policy discussion. And if counselors disagree on which process should be used, ideally there should be a dialogue, a discussion where things can be cleared up, and hopefully there could be some form of consensus. But if there isn't, it's really the voting that allows a decision to be made, and it could be because of actual substantive disagreements on which process should be used, and not necessarily an issue of gaming. So I just wanted to make that point as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Amr. Very good points. This is Chuck again. Greg, your turn.
Thanks, Greg Chatton again. I'm wondering if we couldn't make a recommendation that in the event that two processes are, that motions for to commence two processes, you know, for the same question or to respond to the same issue are before the council at the same time, that neither, in essence, neither takes precedence, and that there should be a discussion prior to the vote on both motions, and that only one motion can carry, or something along those lines. It seems like this idea of trying to get one in front of the other is kind of making it seem like things are more awkward at the council than they actually are, I think. I'm not sure exactly how it would work. I'm kind of trying to think this out loud, but it just seems like there should be a more straightforward way to kind of resolve which way to go and to get the appropriate voting threshold of support for one.
Thanks, Greg. This is Chuck. And I think, if I'm not missing it somewhere, that what you're suggesting can be fit into what Mary has suggested in terms of the approach. And also, and I want you to confirm this, Anne, I think that especially the way you recharacterized your concern, it wasn't so much an exception as an issue to look at. What we're really talking about is looking at the bigger picture when there are multiple motions for the same issue. And that's what I think what we really want to happen. Thanks, Anne, for that confirmation. So, Mary, are you comfortable enough at this point to redraft? It doesn't really need to change too much, but a few good points have been made that I think you can incorporate to draft some the approach, and we can all look at that on the list and confirm before our next meeting and or tweak it if we need to make edits or something like that. Mary, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck, and thanks, everybody. I think so. I obviously will have to go back and listen to all of us again before sending something out. My thought at this point is that the actual wording of the recommendation per se won't probably change too much, but what we could do is add some context around that. So, for example, point to one or two of the situations that the group has raised and basically say, kind of like what Alan said, that, you know, this is what we think should be avoided, for example. So I think that's the direction that it would probably go in, although I would want to go back and listen to this recording and maybe read the transcript again just to be sure. So probably in a day or two, you guys will get something.
You are authorized to go back.
Thank you.
Okay. And this is Chuck again. And make sure you get some alphabet soup in there, please. Okay. And if you weren't looking at the chat, you won't have a clue what I just said. So anyway, if there are no objections, let's go on to the next agenda item, And that takes us back to comment 5.5 and 5.6, which was ALAC comments, okay? One of them listed as ALAC, one of them listed as Alan. And we have in that regard, I think staff, Mary probably in particular, has put into the action item for that a particular action item. And what I'd like to do is to just for Mary to quickly discuss the action item, and if everybody's comfortable with that, we will move on. Mary?
Thanks, Chuck. Sure thing. So as you see here on the screen, this is the action item from last week that I've assigned to staff. And just to let you know that Amy, Karen, myself, Barry, and Marika have started trying to put something together. And so these are basically three things that we would be due to provide to all of you. A timeline basic that shows, you know, what each of these processes might look like in real time, kind of like what we did with the PDP improvements effort a while ago. And two things in relation to implementation, a potential guesstimate of implementing one or more of these processes, as well as some recent data that you can compare. As I think was noted by some last week, it's not clear how helpful these will be, but at any rate, they can be done. We've confirmed that, and so you can look for that coming from us shortly.
So does anybody have any concerns with that? If anybody's not okay with this, please speak up or raise your hand or put a red X in there. Alan, go ahead.
I am not unhappy with what is there. I presume there is the understanding that this might be an iterative process as we go forward. But in other words, if I as the protagonist in this game don't like the first set of numbers that come out, I can say so, and there may be some iteration on it. But I think that's reasonable.
Shall we take a vote on that? See if we will let Alan do that.
I might go screaming on that one too.
I am just kidding, of course.
Tolerance in meetings is going down as the length of the meetings go up over the last couple of days.
And I do understand.
And for the record, those of us who are on the CCWG accountability, 5 straight hours tomorrow for those who have an interest in the legal issues.
I am glad I'm not on that. I did my 2 intensive days, and some of you did it 2 already as well and are doing it again. So I have all the respect, I think, for you and the world in that, and I don't envy you in that. So, okay, thank you very much. Let's go now to item 5.25. In fact, we're going to actually go to items 5.25. You probably won't be able to show them all on the screen, to the end of 5. So it's 5.25 to 5.33. Now, Mary and I, in discussing these items in the call we had before this meeting, Mary pointed out that they're all pretty much things that we've already covered by previous comments, or they're simply support or things like that. Well, what I'd like to ask all of you to do is to look at 5.25 through 5.33 and see if those need any further discussion on our part. If not, we will jump right to 7. Alan, is that an old hand? Thank you. Okay. I'll give you a minute to just glance through those. I think they're all things we've already covered, or they're things that are just simple supports or whatever. Or there's one no opinion and so forth. So, Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This summer, just in regards to 5.26, I think it was Alan who accurately pointed out before that there are no GNSO activities that are binding on the ICANN board, and I don't think that this working group is suggesting any either. So I don't know if folks would like to put that in as a working group response or not.
Yeah, thank you, Amr. Good point. And I think what the BRG is saying there is, in the case of the GGP, we did say that a GGP could be binding on the board. Now, that's using the word very loosely, because you're absolutely right. We can't do anything that's binding on the board. So I don't know if we want to change our language in what we say about the GGP in that regard. But in other words, the board had to consider – it was recommended that the board implement it, but there was no binding requirements on registries and registrars was the distinction that we were trying to make, like with regular consensus policies. Anne, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chuck. I had to unmute. I think that earlier when we were talking about definitions of what's binding and what's not binding, and we were distinguishing between the GIP, for example, and the GGP, Marika had pointed out that when we use the term binding, we're talking about the level of board vote that is required to overturn the recommendation. So ultimately, although a recommendation might not be 100% binding, it is, by our definitions in the report, binding unless overturned by a certain level of board vote. So I don't know if Marika's on the phone, but I think she is the one who had clarified in the initial report what we meant by the term binding and non-binding in relation to the GIP and the GGP.
Thanks, Anne. This is Chuck, and I'm sure she can, but she is not on the phone. Marika is presently putting in about 48 hours work and 24 hours trying to finalize the CWG recommendations for posting for public comment before the day is out. So that's why she is not with us today and why she wasn't with us last week. And today is probably even worse than last Wednesday. So that's what happened. Mary, did you want to comment on that?
Yes, I did, Chuck. And basically, this is just to confirm what Anne said, that Marika has confirmed the use of the language, and I've tried to capture that in the working group response column here, that, you know, we were talking about two things. One, that we're distinguishing between the types of consensus policies, and secondly, in terms of, you know, recommendations that are presumptively of sorts binding on the board unless they overturn it by supermajority, et cetera.
Thanks, Mary. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks. It's Greg Chatton for the record. I think, you know, part of this may just be a semantic issue. We probably shouldn't have used binding to refer to the way that, you know, policy recommendations are voted on by the board. It's not really a binding issue. It's a supermajority rejection issue, or probably ideally should have gone back to the bylaws and just, you know, characterized it exactly as it was. So this is, to my mind, kind of a non-issue. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, well said. This is Chuck. Anne, your turn.
Yes, thanks, Chuck. The reason I think it's not exactly a non-issue is because what the group has recommended is that the outcome of a GGP process is, quote-unquote, binding on the board at the same level as, I believe, a PDP recommendation. In other words, a distinction was made between the GIP process, which is just, hey, here's some input, and and a GGP process in which if the board adopts, if the GNSO asks the board to adopt, and if the board adopts our recommendations, a GGP results in a recommendation that is, quote-unquote, binding to the extent that it can only be overridden by a certain level of board vote. So there is a distinction in the processes that we're recommending. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. Alan, go ahead.
I think what this raises is that we probably need to go back and not use the word binding. We may have defined it somewhere carefully so we covered our somethings, but technically it's not the correct use of a common English language word, and we should be careful because people will presume it means it has the standard meaning, even if we defined it somewhere else.
Thank you, Alan. This is Chuck. And I think we're all on the same page on this. We understand what was intended. Binding in the same sense that a PDP is binding on registries and registrars, except for the fact that the board always has the last say. So I think the language can be fixed, and I'm sure Mary has captured that. Greg, go ahead.
Not to beat a dead horse, but in the accountability working group, we spent quite a number of hours, even a couple of hours today, a lot of it revolving around what is binding and what is, you know, what is not binding. And I think, you know, it's a term of art in governance and corporate board governance and the like. And, you know, there's people are fighting for the right to make certain things binding. And they definitely do not mean this when they're talking about fighting for the right to make things binding. So let's be aware that we're going into a hyper-aware community, at least any of those who are watching the accountability group, you know, will have binding all over their heads. And, you know, to use the word both incorrectly and in such an atmosphere, I think, doesn't do us any favors. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Alan, go ahead.
Chuck, I have to thank you. You just gave the best example I could of the dangers. You said a PDP is binding on registries. In fact, what it is the implementation of a board-approved, GNSO supermajority-approved recommendation that's within the picket fence is binding on registries.
Well said, Alan.
But we use a short term, one word to mean that. Not everyone will understand all of those subtleties. So we need to be careful. Thank you.
Very good. Good comments by everyone on that. So now, are there any other comments on 5.25 through 5.33? Okay. Let's move on then to 7. Now, why did we skip 6? I don't know if everybody saw that on the list, but what Marika did in with the comments was a lot of the comments on 6 really blended very nicely with the comments on 5, so they were kind of blended together. So that's why we're going to item 7. Now, I think, Mary, what we ought to do, and I think I mentioned this on the list before a week or so ago, is that we ought to have a note to that effect to explain why there's nothing for 6. Because this document, the comment review document, will be part of our final report. And we can avoid a lot of questions if we put a little footnote or some comment in that regard. Okay.
Yes. Chuck, we've noted that, and my apologies. I actually lost Adobe connectivity, so I'm going to put the document back on right now.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Now, let's go to question 7, and notice what it says in the – well, you can't see it on the table right now, but question 7, in the initial report, the working group recommends that advisory committees and the board could request a GGP, but only the GNSO Council would have the authority to actually initiate a GGP. And here's the question. Should an advisory committee or the board have the ability to initiate a GGP similar to their ability to do so for a policy development process, i.e., the GNSO Council would be required to commence a GGP? Now, we might be able to, and we don't have to do this, but it seems to me that there are several commenters that have suggested that the board should be able to do it and the GNSO Council can only counter that with a two-thirds vote. In other words, what is defined as a supermajority vote in the GNSO. Now, we can go through each of the comments individually, but I wanted to throw that out for general discussion, and then we can come back to it as we look at the individual comments in Section 7. So my general question is to kind of help us through this maybe in a quicker manner. Is there any strong opposition to taking that approach of, and notice, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong because it's been a while since I looked at all of these comments on 7, but is it correct that nobody recommended that SOs and ACs would be able to do that, but several thought that the board should be able to request a GGP, and the council then could only not do a GGP if they had a supermajority vote. Did I get that correct? If I didn't, please speak up. Thanks, Anne. I appreciate that. And nobody's, I don't think, let me scroll down and make sure nobody's disagreeing with that. Okay, good. So now that may help us go through some of the comments a little more quickly. But let's start out with our friend John Poole on comment 7.1. All in favor of John's suggestion, please put a green check mark in there. The GNSO should be abolished. Oh, thank you, Almer. I appreciate that. Okay. Who else was that other green check mark? Aubrey, too. Thanks, Aubrey. Yeah, well, if it wasn't for some of the people on the council, you know, we wouldn't have to say that, right? Okay. So, I mean, on John's comment, I don't know that we need to even respond to that comment. My inclination is not to, but if somebody thinks we should, I don't even want to say noted on this one, but that's my own personal view, not the chair's view. Okay, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I've had enough of these halfway recommendations. I think we should just abolish ICANN and give us all back a hell of a lot of time.
Should we put that as the recommended action?
Yes, only if you could put a smiley face with it.
Okay, thanks. All right, so let's go. Nobody objects to just not responding to this. Is that okay?
No. Chuck, it's Alan. Respond. The idea may have merits, but it's out of scope for this PDP, for this working group.
Do you think we should say that?
I think we should say that.
And Amr agrees. Well, I mean, I'm not opposed to saying that. I got several agrees. Greg disagrees. I could kind of lean to not saying anything, but I could live with that if most people want to do that. Greg, do you want to comment?
Well, this call's being it's Greg Chatton. Yeah, this call's being recorded, so I will be temperate in my comments. But I think it's unfortunate to mollify kind of those with the most extreme comments. It's just, you know, I think this should be rejected. Not that I believe that the GNSO is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I think the idea that it should be abolished for, you know, kind of yeah, obviously, you know, I have plenty of criticisms of the new GTLD program too, but that's I don't think that's, you know, puts one to the other. Plus, I think, as you say, it's out of scope. So I would not, if the idea is out of scope, we really don't have to make any comments on its merits one way or the other. So I wouldn't humor the commenter on this. Maybe I'm just reacting to a lot of the current atmosphere in the CCWG, which I find to be a few people making it very counterproductive. I think those who make things counterproductive should not be humored, tolerated, because that's the way things go, but not humored. Thanks.
So one thing we could do in the working group response is just put out of scope and keep it at that. But let's see what others have to say. Anne?
Yes, thanks, Chuck. That's certainly my suggestion. I certainly don't think we ought to spend any more time on this, and I don't think we should say that the idea has merit at all. I think we should just put comment outside of scope for this working group, period, the end.
Thank you, Anne. Chuck again. Alan, go ahead.
I believe I said some people believe it has merit, or at least that's what I should have said, but I'm quite happy with just saying it's out of scope.
Thank you, Alan.
Although
okay.
I do like injecting humor into these overly serious documents.
It certainly helps in our meetings. So thanks, Alan. It's Chuck again. All right. So let's go on to question 7-2, which was the registry comments, but I think that they are, and being, I think, the only registry representative on this, they are consistent with the thing I said at the beginning. So in this, we can, I think, the recommended action would be as I described at the beginning. Is that correct? Any problem with that? Now, Janet, in comment 7-3, says yes, so I assume that she may think that SOs and ACs both maybe should be able to initiate or request the initiation of a GGP. So what we have agreed to so far doesn't go quite that far, so we may need to put some comment here, and maybe the comment is as simple as, our response could be as simple as, the public comments tended to support the board doing that, and there were very few that supported the SOs and ACs, so the working group decided to put the board in that category, but not the SOs and ACs. Does something like that work? Any problems with that? But I do think we need to respond to her because she said yes. Without much commentary, Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, remind me what we do have in the report so I phrase my next statement properly. What are we recommending, that only the GNSO be able to?
Yeah, I'll read it to you again, okay? In the initial report, the working group recommends that advisory committees and the board could request a GGP, but only the GNSO council would have the authority to actually initiate a GGP.
Okay.
So the question really is, should an advisory committee or the board have the ability to initiate?
Okay. So the first bullet from the registries is exactly what we said.
Yes.
Okay. If I remember the discussion leading to that, it was that the GNSO must have the discretion to decide what process it uses to answer a question. Because based on its understanding of the details of the question and the positions taken by its various constituency parts, it may choose to use a more heavyweight procedure, or it may choose to use something very lightweight if there's really no controversy, and therefore the GNSO must have the discretion. And I think we talked about that a lot. I think there was very general agreement that that was the way to go.
I think you're correct. Thanks, Alan. It's Chuck. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. Yep. First off, I do agree with Alan. I also wanted to note, again, the math of a supermajority vote versus the voting thresholds required to initiate a GGP. They really do not conflict. So if the GNSO Council can overturn a request by the board or any other SO or AC using a supermajority vote, it really comes down to the same voting threshold that would be required to initiate a GGP. So they wouldn't necessarily solve anything, or it wouldn't create a problem either, because if the board or an SO or AC are asking the GSO to look into something, and you need the voting threshold similar to a PDP to initiate a GGP, if you have the number of councillors agreeing to that, then you will not have the number of councillors that would be required to have a supermajority vote to disagree with it. So it really makes no point to differentiate the two. The only thing I see here is that it may just serve to waste time, because if the board or an SO or AC do request that the GNSO use a GGP to answer a question, then the GNSO would have to go through the motion of either agreeing or disagreeing. In the event that it disagrees, then it would have to use another motion that would have to be submitted for a later meeting to answer this question using another process. If we do leave the decision of the process to the discretion of the GNSO, I'm guessing that this could move along a bit faster. So in the earliest opportunity, the GNSO could just decide on which process to use to answer what question. Thanks.
Thanks, Amr. Any other comments on that? Okay. On comment 7. Oh, I'm sorry, Mary. Go ahead.
Sure, Chuck. And this is more of a general comment to follow up on Amr's suggestion. There seems to be quite a lot of, well, not quite a lot, but some yeses in this question 7 overall. So it may be helpful for us to consider, well, yeses and nos, to consider the remaining responses and maybe formulate a single response rather than individual ones to each commentator, because that seems to be the direction that we're going in.
Thanks, Mary. And that's kind of what I was getting at by my introductory remarks, that we can kind of cover these all together in that regard. So I think that is the right approach. Anne, go ahead.
Thank you, Chuck. I wanted to understand Amr's suggestion better. Amr, are you suggesting that the threshold for GGP and EPDP be the same? What concerns me there is, what if you don't have that threshold for either process, and where do you end up? Thank you.
Amr, you can respond. It's really not part of the question we're answering here, but go ahead if you'd like to respond.
I actually did not really understand the question. And are you asking me if I believe the voting threshold to initiate a GGP be the same as an EPDP?
Maybe I misunderstood what you said. I probably wasn't following correctly.
Okay. In trying to work out the issue of the voting thresholds for the different processes, I did look at the definition of these thresholds in the ICANN bylaws. A supermajority vote in the ICANN bylaws for the GNSO is either two-thirds of council members of each house, or three-fourths of one house and a majority of the other house. So that's what a those are the two sort of scenarios where a GNSO supermajority voting threshold would be. And if you have either one of these levels of voting in the GNSO, then they can't conflict with a minority that disagrees using the regular threshold to initiate a PDP, which is an affirmative vote of more than one-third of each house or more than two-thirds of one house. You really can't have it both ways. So in no way can a supermajority vote for one process conflict with the voting threshold of another one. And that's kind of the point I tried to make a little earlier on today's call as well as on this. So in my opinion, I think a lot of these issues could be resolved if both the GGP and the EPDP require a two-thirds, a supermajority vote of GNSO councillors to initiate the process. Thanks.
Right. I'll just follow up, Chuck, and say that was
ahead.
My understanding of what Amr was saying, and then I was trying to figure out if you can't get supermajority in either case, where does that leave you?
That would leave you with the option to launch a full PDP, and that was my initial desire on either one of these processes being able to trump a PDP. Because eventually, if a motion to initiate a GGP or an EPDP on a specific policy question was rejected by a number of councillors sufficient to not allow the motion to pass, you would still have the number of councillors required to still initiate a regular PDP. Does that help at all?
Thanks, Amr. I guess my concern there would be the same one that Alan maybe expressed last week, is that oftentimes we're trying to address issues that arise during the implementation phase, and what we have said, and this is Anne for the transcript, but what we've said is we're trying to develop processes that will address issues that arise during the implementation phase that may have policy implications, but people are going to argue about whether they're policy or whether they're implementation, but oftentimes the issue that arises is the need to address the issue more quickly. And so I saw it as part of what this group was doing to develop standardized processes that could be where there would be, you know, full input from all stakeholders, as opposed to private deals that are made on the side, which can be very, very rapid. But that, in fact, you know, would be tools that would be get answers potentially more rapidly than a full PDP. So when we talk about applying thresholds to these processes that, you know, potentially force the full PDP, I'm not sure we're addressing in particular the need of the board to reconcile the differences between GAC advice and GNSO recommendations. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. I think if we did what Amr is suggesting, we'd be defeating the purpose of this whole process. As Anne suggested, yes, we don't want to almost automatically revert to a PDP if the other processes are blocked, because that's inserting a PDP at just the wrong time in many cases. That's number one. Number two, the whole reason the threshold for a PDP is low is to make sure that someone who doesn't want the possible outcome cannot block it. And it would be very easy if the threshold for a PDP were significantly higher, that someone who sees the writing in the sky, that they know what the outcome is going to be and they really don't want it, they block the whole thing occurring. And that's just as possible on a GGP or an EPDP. So I really think you need to keep the thresholds low, and we're we're now back to the discussion I thought we finished already of which has priority, which process trumps which, if both are being suggested. If you don't like one process, make a motion for the other one. Then we revert to the previous discussion, and that's fine. We can't stop that from happening. But we really don't want to make it easy for a party who doesn't like a projected outcome to block the occurrence of the discussion. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Now, I'm going to try and help us finish off question 7. So just if you take a look at 7-4, 7-5, 7-6, 7-7, and 7-8, I think that we've got a response that works for all of these if we're in agreement that we're going to support a slight modification, what we said. In the case of the board, they can request it, and it'll be done unless the council votes with a supermajority not to do it. Is that okay, or do we need to, and we've got representatives of the NCG and the IPC and certainly the ALAC here, so those are three of the commenters in this case. Thanks, Anne, for the check mark there. Nobody's disagreeing, so is it okay if I move ahead to question 8? And I think the more controversial question we're going to get to is question 9. That's where we're going to get to the threshold, so we it'd be nice to leave a little bit of time for that. But, okay, so not seeing any objections, are you comfortable with what we just concluded on 7, Mary?
Yes, Chuck, I think so.
Good, thanks. So going to 8 then, question 8 is, for an EPDP, it is currently proposed that only the GNSO Council can initiate this process, although an AC board could request the GNSO Council to consider doing so. Do you agree? That's the question in number 8. Now, I'm gonna make a big jump here. In looking at through the comments on 8, I don't really see any objections. I mean, there are people that said we got one no from John Poole. I won't comment on that because it is recorded, right? And everybody else said yes. So I think we're okay on that, aren't we, on number 8? Any disagreement with that? Okay. Let's go to 9. And question 9, then, as you can see on the screen, is the proposed voting threshold for initiating a GGP is the same as for initiating a PDP, which is an affirmative vote of more than one-third of each house or more than two-thirds of one house. Do you agree? And, Lance, we have some mixed responses here on number 9. So we probably need to spend some time deciding how we're going to do this. The registry said yes with some comments. Janet said yes, no opinion from Carlos. Yes from the IPC, no from the NCSG, and yes from the ISPCP and from the ALAC. Let's start, if you don't mind me picking on you, let's start with the NCSG and let one of you from the NCSG who would like to comment on why on the comment that's there rather than me trying to talk through it. Do we have a volunteer from the NCSG to talk about that? By the way, Aubrey, I'm very happy to see you join us. I didn't acknowledge that earlier. I should have, but as busy as you have been on the CWG today, I'm very feel very privileged that you made time for this group. So anyway, is there a volunteer from the NCSG to talk about your comments, which is comment 9.6. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. Isn't that the same issue that I've been talking about the past couple of calls? Is there anything new here? I think when I did raise this earlier, I said that this question wasn't addressed further in the survey, but obviously I was mistaken. But I don't think I have anything new to add. I think we've gone over this quite a few times already.
And so let's just refresh my memory, Amr. This is Chuck. So the NCSG thinks that the voting threshold for initiating a GGP should be higher than for a PDP, correct?
This summer, yes, that is the NCSG comment. It is also my personal opinion. Thanks.
Okay. And in this particular case, with the exception of John Poole and Carlos with no opinion, others said yes. So I guess we need to talk about how we reach some consensus as a working group on this particular issue. So Amr has stated his positions previously. If people have questions of him, that would be fine to ask. Let me go to Alan since his hand's up.
Thank you. Isn't this exactly the same discussion as we just finished? Because my answer is exactly the same as the one I gave last time. So maybe I'm missing something or having some.
So in other words, Alan, this is Chuck. You want it. You don't want it to be so high that one party can
block the
block
process,
it.
Right? And if one group believes that we shouldn't be doing a GGP but should be doing a PDP, then the onus is on them to put a motion forward to that intent, and then we revert to the discussion that we had at the very beginning of the meeting.
Thank you, Alan. Chuck again. Anne, go ahead.
Sorry, coming off mute. I do think it's the same discussion. I think one thing I'd want to raise with Amr is, in terms of the processes that we have designed in the group, there's an issue of the scope of the process to begin with, because with respect to the GGP, I think we've all said that that's obviously not something that can, you know, result in consensus policy. It's not a process that's appropriate for that type of, you know, quote-unquote binding outcome. I hate to use the word binding, but and so that the danger that NCSG has identified may not be as high with the GGP process as is feared. I'm not sure, but it just seems that the way that we scoped these processes and the way that the council decides to pursue which of the processes they'll follow, that, as Alan says, that would be potentially, you know, debated and discussed prior to voting on any of the motions, hopefully, and that the GGP does not necessarily pose the type of danger that is anticipated here.
Thanks, Ann. Chuck again. Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. I would pose this question to you, Alan. Why does the onus lie on the counselors that believe that a PDP should be used to address a specific policy question, not those who think a GGP is the correct process? A PDP is generally a process that could address any policy question. It's got almost no criteria spelled out that would require the use of that process, as opposed to a GGP that does have specific criteria, and those need to be met, and counselors do need to agree that this process is, in fact, appropriate to answer a specific policy question. In the event that it is, then sure, counselors should vote in favor of initiating a GGP. I can't see a blanket rule that would sort of require a GGP being the go-to process in, for example, a policy question that comes up during implementation. It could very well be something that requires a full PDP. So if the criteria are there that would suggest that a GGP is the appropriate process, then it is on the counselors who believe this to be the case to make that case and present it and have a higher voting threshold to initiate the process. That at least is the way I see it. I see the standard being the PDP and GGP being the exception that needs to be approved by a supermajority of counselors. And that's kind of the point I've been trying to make this whole time. It isn't a question of blocking a substantive policy discussion. It's just about which process is more appropriate to be used. Thanks.
Amr, this is Chuck. I have a clarification question for you. You just used the term supermajority. Does the NCSG think that the approval for GGP should be a supermajority?
Yes, Chuck.
Because it could be higher than what it is for a PDP without being a supermajority.
If it is higher than what it is without being a supermajority, then you would still have the issue of conflicting motions being in play.
Supermajority.
Yes, I would say supermajority.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted.
If it's anything less than a supermajority, I don't think it would make much of a difference.
Okay, thank you, Amr. Thanks for clarifying. Greg, go ahead.
Greg Shatton, I think that the PDP, has been the standard for policy development because it's been the only route toward policy development. So I wouldn't give it such an incumbent advantage. I think the reason that we have designed these other more lightweight processes is because the PDP isn't really fit for purpose for a policy question that comes up during implementation, essentially during the rollout phase or pre-rollout phase on something where there's already been policy made once already. And I think that a PDP, is the right thing if it's a, significant new initiative or change, that's a, very substantial and one that really deserves the kind of full weight. The PDP is not fully spec'd out. There is some flexibility in it, but in 7-8 years I've been around here, I've seen some variation, but you're not going to get a 2-month PDP, and so it really needs to be something. If we throw a PDP at something that's in the middle of implementation, we're basically saying we don't want to implement it this year. The idea is to be fit for purpose. Part of the problem here is I think maybe we need to be more insistent isn't quite the right word because it's not up to us once we're done. It's up to the community, but more clear about the purposes and reasons why each of these processes work, because most of the time it shouldn't really be a choice between two, much less more than two of these. In terms of purpose, there obviously will be gray areas, but even there, it's better, I think, to make the decision on the merits than by stacking the deck. Thanks.
And Greg, Chuck, again, a clarification question. And what would you call stacking the deck? Sorry to put you on the spot. Did we lose Greg?
Sorry, my phone was acting wonky. My answer simply would be I think that any time we're putting the voting threshold for one route higher than another, we're stacking the deck.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That answers my question for clarity. Thanks a lot, Greg. Chuck, again, speaking, and Alan, it's your turn.
Thank you very much. I'll try to, if I can remember the questions that Amar asked, I'll try to address them, or at least address something related to them. I think a reasonable principle, assuming everyone is in this for the common good, which is not always the case, I understand, we want to use the most lightweight process that can be used to achieve an answer. Some of us have been on a lot of PDPs, and, I've aged a lot over the process. And that's not necessarily a good thing. Now, yes, there are cases, I'm sure, where there's going to be an interpretation. A GGP, to a large extent, is not setting policy, but perhaps more interpreting policy. I'm not quoting verbatim from our words, but, that's certainly part of the reason that we've invented that process, is that we've been asked by the board to, say, what does this mean? Or can you modify something a little bit? Does that still meet your policy objectives? I really do not believe that we should be in a position where a lightweight process is thwarted by someone who doesn't like the potential outcome they see coming. And that's what putting a supermajority as requiring the vote does. Yes, a single stakeholder group cannot veto, but a single stakeholder group plus one can veto. And I think that's a really dangerous precedent to set. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Chuck again. Now, before I suggest a resolution on this, let me point you to comment 9.2 from the registries, and in particular the second bullet, because I think the first bullet of the registry's comment is already covered. But the second bullet says the description of the GGP processes must make it clear that a GGP cannot be used to impose new implementation processes on contracted parties. We know it can't change their contract like a consensus policy can, but if a GGP is used to introduce some implementation requirement on registries, that's what the registry stakeholder group second bullet there is about, and they're suggesting that it not be that the process not be used to. So my question for you is, in our description of the GGP, is there support for making a statement like that or not? So, Greg, your turn.
Yeah, I think this bullet point concerns me a little bit. First off, I mean, part of it, just the phrasing, a new implementation process. Well, I mean, implementation is putting something in place, so it's not the implementation process that's really being talked about as well. And right now, if we're talking about implementation, something hasn't been implemented yet, so everything is new. If it's, as you say, it's more about interpreting policy. I think Alan says it's more about interpreting policy than making it in a sense. But it's, there is a, it's become a policy question. It's one that where you can't, the idea is that, mere implementation isn't sufficient to answer the question. There are choices to be made. I think to say that the GGP can't make certain choices that will result in something happening when in the implementation process itself, the staff is making a decision about what should happen, how to fill in the details, how to actualize, how to make something that's been put on paper, in some cases, a bit sketchily, is filling in the blanks. So I don't think you can hamstring the GGP process that way. I think that to some extent this may get to a question of fitness for purpose, but I think you have to be able to tell at the beginning whether something's fit for purpose, rather than saying that, this group can decide, if this group is looking at A and B, it can decide to choose B, but it can't decide to choose A. It has to be able to, there has to be, a judgment method. And regardless, we're still talking about multi-stakeholder processes and processes with a reasonable, it's going to take place with a reasonable amount of care. So I'm not sure why the allergy to the GGP. I know it's the shock of the new, but, really we're not trying to replace PDPs here. We're really trying to replace ad hoc processes and, decisions made in the dark and, things, being different each time and trying to introduce some regularity to the types of, quote-unquote policy or policy slash implementation issues that come up, in the cracks between, the bigger PDP-generated policy questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Alan, your turn.
Thank you very much. I'm getting tired, so I don't take full responsibility for what I'm going to say. No, well, we've already covered the fact that the exact wording that is used here may not make a lot of sense, because imposing implementation processes on contracted parties, although occasionally we do ask contracted parties to participate in an implementation process, I don't think the GGP does that as such, or at least doesn't typically. So assuming what they're really saying is the GGP should not be able to impose things on contracted parties, in other words, should not facilitate implementation making decisions or implementations that can affect contracted parties, I think what they're saying is the GGP must never have any outcome. Because almost everything we do, not everything we do, but almost everything we do, does affect contracted parties. That's the nature of the policies that GNSO is making. An awful lot of them do affect registrars or registries. So saying that GGP cannot affect the implementation, which may be involved with contracted parties, I think is saying, we'll have it on the books, but we're never allowed to do anything really. So I think this has to be objected to. Aside from anything else, as Greg pointed out, this is a multi-stakeholder process. Even if it was a PDP, a single stakeholder group cannot veto and cannot say, no, you can't do it. And we certainly could not impose a rule on a PDP saying it must never impact what contracted parties do. So I think this is a nice try, perhaps. But I think it's misdirected.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you, Greg. I agree with both of you. It's not worded well at all. In fact, the wording is problematic. And I actually think, personally, that the registry concern here is maybe misdirected. It not to a GGP. If there is some implementation detail that comes out of a GGP that's not consistent with policies, we've already dealt with that elsewhere in our recommendations, I believe. So my suggestion on this, I think we do need we should have a response in the response action. I don't think we need to make any changes based on that. With regard to the first bullet, we can say that's already covered. The second bullet, this may be asking a lot, Mary, but maybe Alan and Greg can help you because I think they both expressed it pretty well. if not briefly. sorry about that.
So late in the day.
You can capture Mary, capture a few of the thoughts on this, and if you need help, ask for help from Alan and Greg, because I think they're right, and that's coming from a registry stakeholder member. Okay.
I hope we're recording this.
Yeah, you're trying to incriminate me. Well, yeah, we are recording, so okay. All right, now let's go to before we close the meeting. Here's my suggestion for resolving question 9 and the various comments there. I think this is a case, and I'll give you a chance to disagree with me here shortly. I think this is a case where we have we don't have full consensus on the working group response here, but there is strong support in the working group for agreeing with number 9, but we have a minority position from one of our stakeholder groups, and so what I'd like for the minority statement from the NCSG on this. Now, Amr or whoever else is going to do it, you can have the statement that you have in there right now, or you can modify it. But I would like you to be the ones that decide what statement is put in there, because I think the minority positions needs to be reported. Is there any disagreement with that approach on number 9? Better scroll down so I can see everybody. Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr. I think it would be helpful at this point, since we're on the GGP, to also revisit an earlier comment by the NCSG also on regarding this process, regarding obligations on registrants. And I think this is somewhat related to the discussion as well. And I think it would be helpful to also understand where the working group stands on adding a criteria for the suitability or lack of this process regarding new obligations on registrants similar to those on contracted parties. Thanks.
I'm fine with that, Amr. I'm trying to understand where that fits and where we're at here.
Just if we are going to be submitting a minority statement on this process, I guess I would include that in it as well. If the working group felt the same about that as the issue of the voting thresholds, thanks.
Okay, I'm still not clear, Amr. Sorry, I'm a little slow. I'm probably tired like Alan, but. Are you saying that the NCSG wants to include a comment about impact on registrants in their minority statement, or are you looking for agreement from the working group that the impact on registrants should be considered?
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr again. Yeah, it was already included in a previous comment that the NCSG submitted. That a GGP should not create any new obligations on registrants similar to contracted parties. We did discuss this in the public comment review tool. The working group response is noted, but I'm not sure what noted means. Does that mean that the working group agrees with this or disagrees? And my question is that I would like clarification on that, because if we are to submit a minority statement on the voting thresholds regarding this process, I would also assume to include one on this if the working group disagrees with that as well. Thanks.
Let me speak for myself first, and Mary, I see you lowered your hand. I was going to get to you next, but I personally don't disagree with that effect. In fact, I think the only way to really impact registrants is to impose things on registries and registrars. that they then have to flow down, you know, regardless of whether they want to or not. But is anybody in disagreement with my view there? But Amr, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Amr again. An example we gave in response to that question on whether we agree with the GGP or not, and it was specific to cases that may create new obligations on registrants without creating new ones on contracted parties, include possible changes to processes such as the UDRP or the URS. So those wouldn't necessarily involve contracted parties, but could involve registrants. Thanks again.
Okay, but those are consensus policies, right? The URS and the UDRP. So they would have to be changed via a PDP or an EPDP, I think. Let me go to Mary.
Thanks, Chuck. And I put my hand up again because that was actually the point I was trying to make, that maybe there's not clarity or, you know, total understanding about this general term contractual obligations. Because the way you're putting it, Chuck, is that the contractual obligation sort of generally stays the same, that a contracted party has to abide by consensus policies, but that if there is a new consensus policy or a change to existing consensus policy, that is still a contractual obligation. I don't know if we need to address that in our report, but I wonder if that would go some way towards allaying the NCSG's concerns on this specific point.
This is Chuck. Do you want to respond to that, Amr? Would that allay the concern?
I'm sorry. This is Amr. To be honest, I'm not exactly sure I got all of Mary's comment. Including what exactly would allay our concerns?
Amr, I was just saying that when referring to contractual obligations, I think what Chuck and other contracted parties might mean is that anytime there's a change to consensus policy, including, say, in the UDRP, that counts as a contractual obligation.
Yes, that is true. But I think the description of the process and and the criteria that sort of would allow it to move forward are very also specifically address changes to obligations on contracted parties without making the same specific case for registrants. So although they do all fall under consensus policies and consensus policies are covered, I would just ask that we add registrants, new obligations to registrants as well. Thanks.
Is anybody opposed to that? Anne, go ahead.
Sorry, the mute button again. I see that we are, you know, a few minutes past the 1:30, and I think that this discussion that we're in and also the chat that I see running, it tells me that this is a discussion that should be continued on the list about the, you know, the issue of requirements on registrants and maybe thought through a little more by everyone and by staff, and I was hoping we could take that up at the top of our next meeting.
Thank you. That's a very good suggestion. Greg, go ahead.
Actually, I think I will withdraw in favor of starting the same discussion fresh rather than being the last, you know, crispy commentator on this point. I'll make myself ready to be popping fresh for the next call.
Oh, thank you very much, everyone, and sorry for going over. We will pick up on this point next time. Remember to take a look at what Mary proposes on 5.5 and 5.6, or the escalation. I'm not even sure which one it was, but she's going to put some text out there to try and capture what we talked about, and if we can resolve that on the list, that would be great. Otherwise, we'll pick that up as well before going on to item 10. Next week. Thanks, everyone. I think it was a very productive call. Thanks to all of you, and let's keep up the good work. And again, if we can have some list discussion between now and next week's meeting, that would be great.
Thank you, Chuck.
Have a good rest of the week.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks, everybody. Operator, can we stop the recording, please? Thank you.